Good morning, Boker Tov. So wonderful to be back together in person, live from the Boker Raton Synagogue. Parsha Perspectives for today. I want to begin by thanking our generous sponsors, Becky and Avi Katz and family, who've dedicated the entire series in memory of Becky's father, David Grossman, Le'ilui Nishmas, David Menachem Manish. This morning's shiur is also sponsored by David Meyerfeld in commemoration of his father's yahrzeit, Manfred Meyerfeld, Le'ilui Nishmas Menachem Ben Uri Shraga, by Rona Cohen in commemoration of her mother's yahrzeit, Doris Yaffe, Zechrona Levracha. And this morning's shiur is also in memory of my grandfather's yahrzeit, which is today, Sam Aboff, for whom my son is named, my beloved Zayda. His neshama should have an aliyah. We think about him, continue to be influenced and inspired by him often. Lastly, I want to remind everyone, if you've not yet signed up for our one-on-one campaign, in the merit of our beloved Esti Moskowitz, Esther Tila Basari Atzipora, $1 a day of giving, a minute a day of Torah study, you can go to birasonline.org/1and1. Please join. We are learning Parshas Korach, page 820 in the Art Scroll Stone, Chumash. Vayikach Korach, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kas, Ben Levi, Vedatzav Aviram, Ben Eliyahu, Ve'on, Ben Pelas, Ben Reuven. Our Parshas continues the adolescent journey of the Jewish people towards self-discovery, the maturation, the growing pains, some of the difficulty for Moshe Rabbeinu and of God as the Jewish people are growing into their own. They went from a family to the birth of a nation, an incorrigible, difficult nation, and emerge hopefully to grow to be a holy and model nation, but it takes time. And here we have not only the underpinnings, the source of rebellion, the sugya of what it means, rebellion, rebelliousness, but of machlokas, the danger of the insidiousness of machlokas, of conflict, of unnecessary tension, of how that destroys and tears apart families and communities and a people. And we will get into that in a moment, but let's begin with the name Korach itself. I picked up, while I was in New York, a new sefer, Otzer Plos HaTorah. It's a thick, big new sefer. This is just Bamidbar. And basically, somebody did some hard work to dig up unusual, interesting, Reb Zev Zicherman dug up some fascinating, interesting things on each parsha. So he begins with the following. He quotes the sefer Or Moshe, who says something, Adavar Nifla, says something wondrous, says something incredible. He says, Dadar Yisrael Agon, Reb Chaim Palaji, Lefiyami Yudiyasi Lo Matzais Lo Chevel Lefisha, I didn't find anyone else who says this, She'ena Kora U'Meshtamish B'Shem Korach. There's a tradition from Reb Chaim Palaji, Kafachayim, not to refer to our parsha by the name Korach, not to employ, not to use, not to engage the name Korach. Ben Levi. What's the name of the parsha? Ben Levi. Who's the one who rebelled and challenged Moshe? Ben Levi. Don't use his name. Don't refer to him, articulate by name. Why? Why? And for example, he quotes the Nefesh Chaim. Nefesh Chaim writes near the Farish Peshat HaMedrash Rabbah, Parshas Ben Levi, as an example. And Kaf HaChaim, and other Sfarim, who reference Yalkut Reuveni, Ben Kahas, they call the name of our Parsha not Korach. They call it Ben Levi, Ben Kahas. They use another association, another name, another reference to identify the name of the Parsha, but they refuse to reference, to call it Ben, to call it Korach, to use his name itself. Where does this come from? I am a Perish HaTorah Aruch Parshas Pinchas. He says, if you look at the Torah and Parshas Pinchas on the Pasuk, Mishpachas HaKarchi, the family of Korach, who brings in the name of the Ramban, the Bnei Yitzhar, the sons of Yitzhar, are called Karchi, Bavur Kfodom Shal Bnei Korach She'asu Tshuva. Why? We have a tradition that the children of Korach in fact repented. They did Tshuva. We invoked their name in the Sefer Tehillim, because unlike their father, their patriarch Korach, they did not join the rebellion. They did Tshuva. They recreated and reestablished themselves. They were tzaddikim. However, the Torah writes on this. Listen to what he says. Eini mevin atam shekosav shekor lemishpachas ayitri hashem korach. Adraba, shem rishon yirkov. The pasuk in Mishlei in the Chazal tell us that shem rishon yirkov, the name of the rotten people should rot, should be spoiled. The name of the wicked should be eliminated, should not be used. Vein roy likros bishmam, we should not use their name. So the Torah therefore says, it's wrong, don't invoke, don't use the name Korach, because Korach himself was wicked. He not only led for his time an incredible rebellion, he created the precedent, he planted the seeds, he sowed the seeds of rebelliousness that we continue to suffer from until today. So the Torah says, don't use the name Korach, don't call the Parsha Korach, Ben Levi, call it Ben ben kahas, call it another name. However, many, most, are not careful with this. Most Mefarshei HaTorah call it by its name, Parshas Korach. Among them, greatest perhaps among them, none other than Rashi. Rashi writes Parshas Korach. And Maseches Zvachim refers to it as Parshas Korach. The Rambam and Parshas Zos HaBracha calls it Seder Vayikach Korach, the Parsha of Korach. And the Rambam writes it here as well. And we have many who do call it. Now you'll say, well, who cares about the name of the Parsha? Where do the names of the Parshas come from? This is not for now, for another time. Where do the names of the Parshas come from? Chazal? Are they from our rabbis? Are they referenced in the Gemara, in the Medrash? No. Where do they come from? We don't know. We're not exactly sure. We don't have a strong tradition of who exactly named the Parshas. However, Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin in his Sefer Resisei Laila writes, Shem shall kol sidra shebetorah kfi mashanoga Yisrael lekrosa, hu mechuvan shall kol sidra al derech shamer b'shemos b'nei Adam. Just like when parents have a level of prophecy when they give a name to a child, which we'll talk about in a moment, so too, whoever established the names of the Parshios encapsulated, they were able to describe the essence, they got to the core of each Parsha when they gave it its name. Every name is B'lashon Kodesh. Shorash HaChiyas Da'oso Davar. Says Rav Tzadok HaKohen, it is the root of the chias of that thing. The names of our parshas reveal the essence of that parsha. Whoever gave those names was endowed with a certain level of prescient prophecy, had some deeper insight or understanding, and therefore we don't dismiss the names of those parshas. The only other thing I'll say on this, he says a couple sections later, he quotes the Chassam Sofer in our parsha. Tamal atzadikim and elevish shekar shem benam Korach. Why did they name him Korach to begin with? There was an earlier Korach in the Torah. Who else is named Korach in the Torah? Who's Korach? For whom is Korach named? One of the children of Esav. One of the children of Esav is named Korach. At the end of Bereshit, it tells us the names of Esav, and one of them was Korach. The Chassam Sofer says, when they named after a wicked person, they already predetermined that this would be a wicked person. When parents name a child, there is an awesome responsibility. There's an awesome responsibility in the name that we give. Names are not random labels. They're not something that we all agree upon to be a description. A chair is a chair. That's an arbitrary English word. We all have agreed. There's a social contract to use the word chair to describe a chair so we all know what we're talking about. But that's not true when it comes to our children. It's not a label or a tag. It's not an arbitrary word or name we use so we're on the same page about whom we're referring to. It's a description. It's a description. It's a trajectory. We are putting a child on a path in life with the name that we give. And that's why it's an awesome responsibility when we name after people. I'm proud my son, Shai Shmuel Yisrael Nasan, is named after my grandfather's Yurtzaitis today and Yechevet's grandfather, both of whom were incredible people. We give a child, we endow a child with a future, with at least potential, through the name that we give. Nachsam Sofer says, it was a terrible mistake of Bnei Levi when they named after one of the children, the offspring of Esav, Shem Sharam Yirkov. We're supposed to rot away, we're supposed to distance ourselves from names of wicked, not even to use them, let alone name our children after them. Chassam Sofer says, Shekomish ir l'sofim korach, sheyatzalach lo ka'amosh rabbeinu avanavim, haysa totsa mizeh, shayashmo korach, shu shem adam rasha. It was all the result of naming after a wicked person. He goes on and on. Fascinating new Sefer. I look forward to sharing some of the insights from it, some of the unusual things that it digs up in there from it. But let's go back with an introduction to our Parsha. And this introduction is critical. Because when you read our Parsha, and we study the Rishonim and the Chazal on it, we are understandably always led to see Korach as this heinous villain, as this horrific person, as the epitome of evil. As we just saw the Chassam Sofer have that attitude towards him. But it's not so simple. It's not so pashut. The Mishnah Novos Perakei, Mishnah Yitzayin, tells us, Ezehi machlokas shelo l'shem shemayim. What's of an example of a machlokas driven by impure motive? What is a machlokas which has a personal agenda attached to it? Machlokas korach v'adaso. And b'muskal rishon mavur b'mishnah shekorach v'adaso yanshe madon riv machlokas. So when the Mishnah, when our rabbis, when they capture and communicate Korach in that context, you can't help but feel, well, Hillel and Shammai, they're machlokas l'shem shemayim. Korach va'adaso, we'll speak about in a moment, the lack of parallel. Hillel and Shammai were adversaries, intellectual adversaries. Korach was an adversary to Moshe, not Va'adaso. So why does it set up as Korach Va'adaso? It should say, Machlokas Hashem Shemayim, Hillel and Shammai. Shelo Lashem Shemayim is Korach im Moshe. Why does it say Korach Va'adaso? If you listen to today's 1 minute in the one-on-one campaign, Rabbi Mirzov quoted a beautiful insight from Rabbi Shemesh. Because Korach Va'adaso, he didn't even get along within his own party and his own people. There was strife and there was machlokas. Even though they joined forces to take on Moshe, within his own party, he couldn't get along, and that's why it's Korach Va'adaso. There are other answers which were given, which we'll see in a moment. But the Mishnah, our rabbis, set it up that Korach is a villain. Korach is a wicked person. But it's not so simple. Chazal see, in fact, greatness to Korach. Pasuk, the Medrash says, Asher Yachtav Nam Tiksod. On the Pasuk, Asher Yachdav Nam Tiksod, Ze Aaron V'Korach, Shishneim Shavim Bifnei Elokim. The Medrash says Korach was equal to Aaron. Their righteousness, their brilliance, their greatness, their tzidkus. He was great, Aaron HaKohen. Moreover, the Medrash there further says, Korach Chacham Gadolaya, Mito'ani Ha'aron. Korach had a greatness, he carried, he lifted the Aaron. Korach was not a simple person. Korach was not driven by a simply impure, egotistical motive. Chazal write about Korach, Chacham Gadol. He was incredibly wise. He was a great chacham. He was incredibly had great achievement. Moreover, Korach pikeachaya. Rashi quotes: he was a pikeach. He was smart. He was insightful. He was wise. So how could he have fallen? And how can we see him and paint him as a villain? The Ari HaKadosh, the great Kabbalist, writes that Sofei Tevos, the end of the word Korach, are Tzadik Katamar Yifrach. The last letters of Tzadik Katamar Yifrach are Korach. A righteous sprouts like a date tree. Tzadik Katamar Yifrach, Korach. Korach was not some pedestrian, simple, civilian, balabas, rebellion, ego-driven. Korach was great, great like Aaron. He was a chacham. He was a gadol. He was Tzadik Katamar Yifrach. Tzadik HaKohen, the second one of the day, in Pre-Tzadik writes, Ta'uso ha'isab neshiyadu b'nafsha shetzadik gamaru, far libo chol b'kirbo, v'ispani yetz ha'ra me'libo, v'kevan shirash ha'libo mi'atzo lachlo kamoshe, v'yadu b'nafsha shlibo shalom t'nei boro, ha'yasabar v'adai yitzos ha'shem yizbarach v'in tzarach lios. He was so right and so righteous, Korach knew how purely he was driven, that when he had this instinct and intuition to confront Moshe, he felt that HaKadosh Baruch Hu planted it within him. He felt he had arrived. He was such a tzaddik and such a chacham that if he felt that and was drawn to that, it must be the will of Hashem. So Rav Tzadok attributes Korach a pure motive, even though, of course, he went horrifically wrong. So Neged goes there, opposite all this, Amda Negiya Shalkina, you see that there was some jealousy, there was some envy, that behind the greatness and the brilliance, behind the righteousness and the virtue, behind all who Korach was and who he could be, ultimately, what was there? Envy and jealousy. So the Altar of Navarak says that that's why it's such a pernicious midah. Jealousy and envy, comparing and competing with others, it'll be our downfall. It's our kryptonite. You can have all the potential in the world. You could be on track and trajectory to be an Aaron HaKohen. You could be a Chacham and a Tzadik HaTamar Yifrach. But when you're driven by jealousy and envy, but when you're looking at and competing with others, it's your end. So the Altar of Navarak says in the Mishnah, Hakina va'taiva va'kovod motzinas adam in ha'olam, that envy and jealousy and taiva, desire, kovod, the desire for honor, they remove a person from the world. So the Altar writes, Shloshes kochos Elohim kishloshes susim gedolim v'atzumim asher bekocham lahotzi adam in ha'olam. These three qualities are like horsepower. They're like the horsepower in a car. They can drive you right out of this world, right off a cliff. But the horsepower of the car can drive you off a cliff or into a tree, but it could also drive you straight to do a mitzvah, to arrive at some destination that you're meant to be. The horsepower itself is not intrinsically good or bad. The steering wheel is what makes the difference. It's how we drive and the direction that we turn. It's how we steer all that horsepower. So kinetiva and kavod are not inherently or intrinsically bad qualities. We know that we have only two inherently, intrinsically bad qualities. What are they? The Ramban and the Rambam both agree. The Rambam in his Mishnah Torah, the Ramban in his Igeres. What are they? Gaiva, arrogance, which we'll talk about this morning. Arrogance. You have to be extremely humble. Ma'od ha'vishva ruach. And what's the other? anger. There's no room for anger. Every other quality is called a mida. They're called midos. We work on midos because the word mida means a measure. They belong in some measure. I always give the example of the Orchas Tzadikim. You're making a chicken soup, you put no pepper in, it's going to be bland and miserable. If you pour the entire bottle of pepper in, it's going to be miserable, you're going to spoil and ruin it. You need to put it in the right mida. The right measure of pepper belongs. That's why they're called midos. So every quality belongs in our recipe, in our repertoire, but it has to be the right mida. There are two exceptions, anger and arrogance. So the author of Navardik says, kinataiva and kavod, those are midos that could drive you to greatness. Kavod, not honor that's driven by ego, but honor of Hashem and taiva. Oiv kesef lo yisba kesef, oiv torah lo yisba keltar. If you tap into that drive and that hunger and that appetite, you can direct the Yetzirah to great things. And kina, envy and jealousy. You see the way someone else davens, the way they learn. You see their instinct for chesed, and you say, I want that. I want to be like that. I want to become that. Then it's a great thing. It's not the horsepower. It's the steering wheel. It's which way we direct. Korach, he steered the wrong way. He was in the wrong direction. He drove off a cliff, quite literally, into the ground. Because even though he had the potential for greatness, he blew it. He blew it. Said about Rav Eliyahu Lopian, the name of the altar of Kelm, Hadvarim Achron Shashom Ram Shisrael Gun Rabbi Yisrael Salant. What was the last thing Rabbi Yisrael Salant said before he died? He said, Akina Vataiva Vakavad Motzina Sa'adam. Rabbi Yisrael Daik Shalolachinu Kasav Ha'adam. The last teaching Rabbi Yisrael Salant said to his Talmidim, the last message of Musar before he left this world, it says that these three things, Kinataiva Vakavad Motzina S, doesn't say Adam. It doesn't say these three qualities remove a person from the world. It says removes Ha Adam. Hey Hayidia, the person. Shafilu Adam Gadol Ma'odim Lo Yilachem Itzro Yotia Osa Amidas Ros Mea Olam. Means Ha Adam, means the great person. No matter how great you are, no matter how great the potential you have to be, if you don't steer the Kinataiva and Kavod wrong, how many great people have we seen? Accomplished, famous, distinguished people. Who kina, taiva, or kavod, one of those things, misguided, misdirected, led them off a cliff, led them to end their reputation and their lives. So it's not just Adam, not every simple person needs to be careful. Ha Adam behe hayidia, the greatest of people. Gemara Sukkah says, the greater you are, the greater your Yetzihara. So the greater people, the greater the importance of steering correctly, of steering in the right direction. Okay. Megid Yosef. My neighbor's father. I love the sefer he gave me. Rav Yosef Suratskin. Megid Yosef. Listen to this insight. Vayikach Korach. So we said the Mishnah Navos sets it up. It's not parallel. It should be Hillel and Shammai, our intellectual adversaries, and Korach im Moshe. What do you mean Korach v'Adah? So we've given answers to this years past. And one of the challenges of the Parsha classes, as you look at the Parsha, you remember all the fantastic Divrei Torah that we shared before, and I'm tempted to remind myself and you of them again. But you could listen to old years over and over again. You could review. There are 7 days in a week, one of them Shabbos, but 6 days leading up to each Shabbos. We have at least six of previous years' Parsha. I say that not to promote myself, because I say nothing novel in my Parsha class. I just repackage and recycle and redistribute everyone else's incredible Torah. So it's worth re-listening again. So Vayikach Korach. So Medrash Shmuel Hiksha Matam Lo Nemar Zemachlokas Korach Moshe. As we said, Shammai Vehilo. Why does it say Korach Va'adaso? Uviyishav Adarm Nir, says the Megid Yosef of Yosef Sirotskin. Shammai Vehilo Lo Hayu Bali Machlokas Mitivam Umitzad Atzmosam. Shammai and Hillel, in their personalities, they were peacemakers. They were peace lovers. They were very happy people. Socially well-adjusted people. They got along with people. They loved and they treasured and they pursued peace. It just happened to be Shammai Savar Asar Behilol Savar Mutar. Nimtzam Chokim Zelzeh. On a certain topic, they had disagreement, so they appeared as adversaries. Because on a certain topic, they came to separate conclusions, but that was about their intellectual position, their halachic position, that wasn't about their mahus, their character, who they were. Who they were. Aval Shammai lelo Hillel, v'chein Hillel lelo Shammai, ein bo shem avak machlokas. If there was no Hillel to be disagreeing with Shammai, and Shammai simply had his opinion, if there was no Shammai to disagree with Hillel, and Hillel simply had his opinion, there's no machlokas. They weren't in their nature, in their character, people of tension and conflict, They just held opinions. And when the opinion was in conflict with another, it appears as a machlokas. And that is a machlokas l'shem shamayim. U'mishum kach l'shem atanu machlokas l'shem shamayim. Machlokas shamay v'hilo. Shkol echad cholek al shita shel hasheni. They're disagreeing about a position. They're disagreeing about a conclusion. But they're not people of disagreement. Avakorach v'adasa b'yisodim shel dvarim. Lo hayu chalukim al shita shel Moshe. Elo yu bali machlokas mitiv'am. Asher k'chipsu es bar plugta. Korach and his Eda, Korach and his group, they were people of conflict. They got a thrill. They had some endorphin release. They had some pleasure out of the fight. Out of the fight. Ulule Moshe Yomotzin Korban Acher Liyitzar Machlokas Shalayim. You know, we know people like this. They're Balei Machlokas. They love to fight. They love a fight. They're not happy unless they're in a fight with someone. They get a thrill out of the fight. They have some distorted joy out of the fight. They love a fight. Now, as community leaders, our job is to say, fantastic. Let me give you a few causes to fight for. Last night, someone distributed anti-Semitic packages and driveways all over Montoya Circle. Terrible. The Goyim Defense League. The Moron Defense League, if you remember the van that passed us by. They distributed little anti-Semitic in our own backyard. We have to fight anti-Semitism. We have to fight for Agunas to get their get. We have to fight for Klal Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael. There are so many worthy causes to fight for. So you take the person predisposed who loves the thrill of the fight and you unleash them on a worthy fight. That's what our job and our responsibility. But if Saratkin the Megid Yosef points out, that's why the Mishnah doesn't have a parallel. Shammai and Hillel's machlokas, it's l'shem shamayim, because they're not bale machlokas. They're not people of conflict. They're not people of tension. You know those people that around every table or in any conversation, they want to, you know, drop something that's going to create, escalate. They love it. There's a thrill. People fighting, yelling, screaming, not talking to each other. They love to whisper, did you hear the fight? Who's not talking? What's happening? The controversy. That's Korach. So they were looking for a fight. They happened to find it with Moshe. If they couldn't find it with Moshe, they would have found it with someone else. So Moshe's not the other side of their equation. It's not Korach in Moshe the way it's Hillel and Shammai. Because when you're a Baal Machlokas, the subject, the object, the target is not someone with whom you have a different opinion or position. You're not intellectually sparring or in disagreement. You're simply a person of machlokas, and you chose to pick it with that person. But it's not really about them or their position. It could have been about with anybody. So it's Korach va'adaso. Ule Moshe matzin korban acher. V'nimtza shemoshe la'yashor she'afilu shuta l'machlokas ala rak emtza'i. Moshe was not part of that machlokas. He was the means. He was the target of the choice. Of the moment, mikum kach loshon atana machlokas shelo l'shem shemayim korach va'adaso ki kol gormei v'tzadi machlokas em tmunim b'korach va'adaso. So that is the Megid Yosef's beautiful insight on this pasuk, on the opening, really on our introduction. Okay, let's go weiter. Pasuk Gimel. So they gather, because that's the way it is, by the way. That's the way it is. And this has been escalated thanks to technology enormously. When you're sincere, you approach someone directly, and you have a conversation. You say, I'm trying to understand your position, or here's why I disagree, or here's my concern. Hear me out. But when you're looking for the machlokas, when you're looking to escalate conflict, when you're doing it not to resolve, but you're doing it in order to become a fan favorite among a group, then it's vayikahalu. You gather. You come as a group. You see this all the time. Where somebody uses social media to attack somebody, why don't you just reach out to them? I'm not talking about personally. Your flight was canceled, so you use social media to call out the airline. How could you? How dare you? Someone get back to me. I'm talking about somebody you know, a neighbor, someone you live near. Talking about a rabbi, a principal, a head of school, where people will use social media when they have a relationship, rather than reaching out, rather than having a direct conversation. Vayikalu, it's nothing new. Nothing new. That methodology of machlokas goes all the way back to the birth of our people, to the desert. Vayikalu al Moshe v'al Aaron. So they gather on Moshe and Aaron. Korach was as much playing to his audience as he was speaking to Moshe and Aaron. Vayomru alem, they say, Rav Lachem, it's too much for you. It's too much for you. You have too much power. You've consolidated all your power. Kol Eidah Kulam Kedoshim. Everybody's holy. Uvisochem Hashem. And inside of them, all of us is God. Umadua tisnasu akal Hashem. Why are you elevating yourself over? Why are you expressing authority over? Who are you? Who are you? In years past, we've discussed that in fact there is some truth, a kernel of truth. It's a compelling argument. That's why it persuaded so many to follow. It's empowering. Many charismatic leaders through history have said exactly this. They've said, why are we listening to a dictator? Why are we listening to a centralized authority? We need to spread the power. Power should be among the people. Let's lead a rebellion. And it worked. And it worked. Rav Lachem. Rav Lachem. Rashi says in these words, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kas, Ben Levi. Sorry, I skipped this. Let's go back to the opening pasuk. Going back to the genealogy of Korach. From whom did he descend? Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kas, Ben Levi. Lo Hizkir Ben Yaakov, says Rashi. Whom did we omit? We left out somebody in his yichus. When Korach was dating on his resume, why didn't it say Yaakov? Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kahas, Ben Levi, you'd think, the Zayda, the Alta Zayda, the Gadol, the Bechir Sheba Avos, Yaakov, the most, who's going to even make a phone call after you put on the resume? Yaakov, everybody. What medicines was Yaakov on? Okay, we'll leave that out. V'chim lo yuzkar shmo b'parshas lo yu. I don't understand. So Rashi says, it doesn't say Yaakov, why? Back to Rashi. Doesn't say Yaakov, why? Shebikesh rachamim al atzmo, because Yaakov anticipated, he knew that there would be machlokas. He said, keep me out. Don't attach my name. Don't identify or associate me with it at all. I want to be as far away as I possibly can from machlokas. From machlokas. So I don't understand. So he davened, leave me out. So if he's not mentioned in the parsha, he's no longer Korach's Alta Zayda. He's still the Zayda. It's still his great-grandchild. It's still on his record. There's still the association. Because the name's not on the resume? Because his name is omitted from the parsha, none of us know? Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kas, Ben Levi. Oh, who is Levi's father again? Oh. We don't know? What did it help to be left out? Why did he daven for that? So Bali Musar explained that Yaakov knew Baruch HaKodesh, that there would be machlokas. So Irur al-Machasus shall godol ador shevi ad apikursus gemur ubikesh atzma yenaki legamrei mishayeches lamida zu. He wanted to be as far away as possible. V'yadu ha-mashayah saba mislabad ga'omer im nira ben tovam shenichshal b'gnevas mamon ein zos ela mishim sh'aviv ha-yabal madrega gavoa mimenu ha-yim esader b'chidushay Torah shelo shelo v'savu sh'ayim madrega gavoa yoser ha-yigon evdas ha-briyas ba-avodos ha-shem yizborach shelo teva zu shal gneva b'kochos nafsho avarts lo b'yirusha mi-asaba shelo avad l'hashnem atzma shelo lignov das ha-briyos etzlo hizbatei ha-davar v'dvarim ruchnim yoser itzla nechad izdader l'madrega n'mucha kazu. If you see somebody's a thief, it means the father, the grandfather, the great father was also a thief. Maybe they didn't steal possessions, material things. They were gonev das. They stole people's impression. So Yaakov davened shliya ben Asher shem shayeches emida gunah shemachlokas. He wasn't davening that he wouldn't be identified with the great grandchild. He was davening that if the great grandchild would have an atiyah towards machlokas, that it didn't come from him. This tefillah made no sense to be about his progeny. Just because he wouldn't be named in the list wouldn't make him not related. So why did it help to daven? So says the author of Slabatka, the tefillah was not for the great-grandchild. The tefillah was, whatever quality is expressing or manifesting itself in the great-grandchild, let it not be because it's coming from me. Let it not be found in me. Let it not be some form of what originated within me. As I said, that is the altar of Slobodka. Okay, now back to our pasuk Gimel. Korach makes this argument. Kulam kedoshim, we're all from Hashem. Rav lachem b'nei Levi. So naf genuk, too much for you. Too much for you. The Gemara Sota learns. Birav chata b'rav laka. B'rav chata d'chsev rav lachem b'nei Levi. B'rav laka d'chsev rav lacha al tosif davar. The Gemara Sota says that same language, that same clause, Rav Lachem, it's too much for you, that Korach used, he later paid for when he was told, Rav Lach Al Tosif Davar. What does it mean? Rav Yisrael Salanta says the following. Yisod Machlokusam Shekorach Adasai She'ifasam Lekuna. Where did it come from? What was the motive? He said, why are you the Kohanim? Why do you have the position of distinction? Why are you serving in an elevated fashion, ostensibly above everybody else? We want it. Rav lachem b'nei Levi. Dai lachem b'zeh shekibaltem z'avodas leviya. Ein lachem l'ratzes ma'la shekiblu acherim. V'avsha etzem ha'yisod emes shal adam l'hakir kochos v'tafkido bo'olam l'smoch b'chalko. Hatayna ha'yisam b'bitoy rav lachem. She'yachad im zeh shadam tzarech l'hakir as kochos v'chayiv tamid sh'ifos l'zrom im ma'la ma'la. Kedei she'agir l'piskas ha'yicholos shalo. וזה ייתכן רק כשישב למעלה גדולוס. חייב אדם לומר, מסה יגיעו מסה למסה יבוסה אב מצווי יעקב. So המידה כנגד מידה אצל משה רבינו עשה, שכאשר הספע למשה לקדוש ברוך להיכנס לארץ ישראל, השם סד רב לך. שהשתמש באוסה מטבע לשון שאמר משה לקורח, רב לכם. Moshe tells them, Rav Lachem. Hashem says to Moshe, Rav Lach. We have to drive ourselves as far as we can go, but we have to know our limits as well. Know our limits as well. Chaim Shmulevitz has an amazing comment here. Kol Eidah Kulam Kedoshim. He made a compelling argument. The problem was, the machlokas came not from a drive to match, to meet, to be on the same level. Where did it come from? We've said already. Kina. Came from jealousy. Came from envy. Kol machlokas shi l'shem shamayim sofa l'skayim. So the Mishnah says, when you have a machlokas that's l'shem shamayim, sofa l'skayim. What does that mean? It's a very funny language. Sofa l'skayim. What does that mean? No, somebody offer a translation. What's sofa l'skayim mean? It'll come to be. How is a machlokas come to be? It'll come to fruition. It'll be fulfilled. It'll be enduring. It will be justified, valid, legitimate. What is sofa l'skayim? Sofa, in the end, hiskayim, it will endure. Why would you ever want a machlokas to endure even if it's l'shem shamayim? She'en l'shem shamayim ain't sofa l'skayim. And then what's the example of each? Hilon shamay. And the Rambam in his Pesach Mishnayos writes, Misha yichalek lo kavanas tiros divrei chavero, elo l'ratzos l'dasas ha'emes, yizkayim u'dvaro v'lo yifsuku. When the reason you came to your conclusion is not in contradistinction to the other, but to defend your belief, sofa l'skayim, then your opinion will endure. But if you arrive at your opinion, not because you believe it to be true or it's part of the pursuit of truth, but only to be different than the other, then it's not sofa l'skayim. I'll tell you as an aside, a beautiful Rav Kook. The Gemara Chazal referred to Talmidei Chachamim through Rachas as Balei Trisin. What are Balei Trisin? What's a tris? Is a shield. They're shield bearers, shield carriers. Why are they called Balei Trisin? Shield bearers, shield carriers. So Rav Kook writes in his Einaya, in his commentary on Shas, on the Agadah. Rav Kook writes, because Chazal didn't carry a sword. They didn't see their mission as piercing the other. They carried a shield to defend their position. They weren't concerned with taking down the other person's position. They weren't concerned with proving the other person wrong. They weren't concerned with delegitimizing, invalidating, marginalizing the other. They carried a shield to protect themselves. This is who I am, this is what I am about, this is what I believe, this is my Mesorah, and I carry a shield to protect where I come from and who I am, and you be who you are. They weren't about destroying the other, they were Balei Trisin, they were shield bearers, they were about protecting themselves. And that's how the Rambam understands. Sofa l'skayim means your opinion will endure when your opinion is a reflection of your pursuit of the truth. But when your opinion is simply to be contrarian, we all know people like that too. Whatever they say, whatever you say, they'll take the opposite opinion. There's a strategy. So, you know, you play a little reverse thinking with them. But the contrarian, they just always take the other opinion. They don't even believe anything they say. They just have to be the outlier. They just have to stand out. They just have to be the contrarian. That's not sofa l'skayim. When you have a contrarian opinion, it doesn't endure. It doesn't last. Because it's only a contrarian. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir, explains the Rambam. Rambam gives us a klal gadol, a yisod ladas machlokas Hashem shemayim or lo. If the two tzadim muchanu l'shmo kol echad es divrei chavero, if the two sides are ready to listen and to hear, and when one side hears something persuasive, compelling from the other, they stop and they say, "You know what? I think you're right. I admit I'm wrong. I had the wrong way of looking at it. I was thinking about it wrong. I had the wrong facts. My data was incorrect. I read the wrong things. You know what? I agree. I've been convinced." That's l'shem shemayim. But when each have their heels dug in so deeply that they can't listen and they can't hear, that there's no opening, there's no window, there's no opportunity at all to be willing to be persuaded, that's not L'shem Shemayim. So you ready? What I'm about to tell you is worth coming to the whole Parsha Shir just for this. They say one of the names of the tzaddikim he heard from the Chavetz Chaim. So what does it mean? Means man rav. Chavetz Chaim flipped the entire Mishnah on its head. And he said, when you believe that your opinion is L'shem Shemayim, Sofa L'Hizkayim, then you're going to dig in your heels and you're going to fight forever. But when you recognize it's not L'shem Shemayim, you don't have a monopoly on the truth, when you're willing to listen and be open to the opinion of others, it's not Sofa L'Hizkayim. It means it won't last forever, you'll be able to resolve it, and you'll come to the truth. Entirely flips the mission on its head. Sofa L'Hizkayim is not the good thing, it's the bad thing. It means it will last forever. So when you're L'shem Shemayim, you've never seen anyone, by the way, in a machlokas. Have you ever met someone who says, yeah, I'm involved in this, it's not really L'shem Shemayim. I was bored, corona, there was nothing else to do. So I got involved in this machlokas. I started this machlokas. You know, if I get a lot of followers, I can monetize that, make a lot of money. So I incited a machlokas. Nobody ever says that. Everyone involved in machlokas always believes it's L'shem Shemayim. Always believes that it's because for the right reason. Always believes it's purely driven. So it's only when you admit, L'shem Shemayim, only Hashem knows. I can't claim that I'm fighting for God. I don't represent God. God didn't give me a monopoly in truth. So therefore, I'm listening. Yaakov Avinu was Yoshev Ohalim, not Ohel. He sat in many tents. He learned in many Batei Medrash. He heard different opinions. Gemara in Erevin says, why do we paskin like Hillel? Hillel and Shammai are these intellectual adversaries. They're the example of Machlokas L'shem Shemayim. Why do we paskin like Hillel? Gemara in Erevin says, because they always heard the opinion of Shammai before they arrived at their own opinion. Before I make my conclusion, Nu, let me hear what you think. Why do you think that way? What led you to that thinking? I hadn't considered that angle. I'll only come to my conclusion once it includes your thinking. But if I've already come to my conclusion before I even hear you out, if I'm closed, I'm shut down, I'm not open to any other way, then I'll never grow. So he entirely flips it on its head in such a beautiful and fascinating way. I mentioned the insidiousness of machlokas, just how terrible and how dangerous and how negative it is. So I want to tell you something about the power of machlokas. We're going to get back into analyzing the psukim themselves in a moment. But just looking at the big picture of our parsha. In the Sefer Yosef Tehilos, he writes that Hashem is so amazing that even after a person makes a mistake, we come up short, we fail Hashem, He nevertheless still gives us parnasa, and He helps us have a roof over our head, and He gives us food to eat. There are people all around us who do not meet Hashem's expectations, and yet, somehow, they have a roof over their head and they have food to eat because Hashem provides. And that's what we say, Nosein Lech L'chol Basar. He provides for everyone. What is L'chol Basar? It's to be marbet, includes even the Chotim. Even the people who are Chotei, the people who rebel against God, who disobey God, the people who dismiss God. He's Nosein Lechem L'chol Basar. He gives everybody Parnasa. Why? Because He's a magnanimous, generous Hashem. He's kind, and He's giving, and He's a loving Father. So He's forgiving, even of the people who are continuing to rebel against Him. L'chol basar, He gives everybody. Indeed, the day the Jewish people built the Egel and worshipped it, the man still fell. Medrash says in the words, L'cha Hashem atztaka b'man. V'lanu boshes apanim b'egel. Kodesh Baruch Hu, You were righteous and kind when You gave us the man. And we, Lanu Boshes Apanim, we were brazen. We rebelled against You. When? Be'egel. So the day of the Egel. You understand what the day of the Egel was? We cheated on Hashem on our wedding night. Infidelity and unfaithfulness. We stood under the chuppah and we pledged to be faithful forever. And then we cheated on Hashem right away. You know what Hashem did? He said, here's the credit card anyway. Use it. Buy what you need. Here's the man. Enjoy. Despite how egregious the Chayta Egel was, the man continued to fall. However, according to the Shevet Musar, on the day that Korach led his rebellion, on the day that he sowed machlokas among the people, the man did not fall. On that day, there was no man. 600,000 people, really 2 to 3 million, went hungry that day. There was no income, no livelihood, there was no food to eat. Why? Because the machlokas, the division and the fighting that was reigning within the camp was intolerable. It was inexcusable. It was inexcusable. The Shlach Kadosh writes in Yuma, machlokas achas docha mea parnasos. One machlokas will push away 100 forms of parnasa. 100 forms of parnasa. Machlokas and tension and fighting, conflict, they're toxic. Not only were Korach and his cohort swallowed alive, but their wives and their children went down with them. Because when someone's in a machlokas, it brings down the entire family. They're all spoken about, they're all named, they're all marginalized. Rashi says something here, you see the severity of machlokas. Beis Din only punishes a person after the age of 13. And Beis Din Shamayla, the Beis Din in heaven, only punishes a person after the age of 20. And yet, machlokas is so noxious that even these young children went down with Korach. The infants of the families involved in the machlokas died as a result. You see how terrible it is. How terrible it is. Our parents know that there are many things we can tolerate from our children. We can tolerate a lot when they don't listen. We can tolerate when they sneak their device. We can tolerate when they don't do exactly what we ask. But what we can't tolerate is when they fight with one another. Machlokas within our own children, within our own family. There's so much that we can accept. So much we can look the other way. And we're nesein lechem l'chol basar. We still shower them with generosity. Even though there's so much we're disappointed in. But what we can't tolerate is machlokas. That doesn't mean they have to conform with one another. You can disagree, not see eye to eye with one another, have different lives and lifestyles than one another. But you can't have machlokas. You can't have conflict. Kadosh Baruch Hu was the same way. Egel, cheta egel, the monster fell. Rebellion, unfaithfulness to Hashem, he still provided. But Korach va'adaso, machlokas, Hashem says, I'm out of here. I have no interest in continuing to be generous to you. Our parsha says, lo yeh kekorach v'chadaso, kasher diber Hashem biad Moshe lo. And though the Rambam himself omits it, listen carefully, the Bahag, the Smag, the Sefer Yerayim, and others, they count machlokas as a mitzvah. It's one of the taryag in the Torah. We have 613. You put on towels and tefillin this morning, keeping kosher, you're going to keep Shabbos. We have 613 mitzvos. There is a specific lav. There is a mitzvah in the Torah not to get involved or dragged into machlokas. No matter how good your intention, no matter how noble your cause. Ravoba quotes from the Altar of Kelm that the isra to get involved in machlokas applies even or especially to noble causes or intentions. Oh, I'm fighting for this reason. Someone has to speak up to them. Someone has to push back. Someone has to write that public letter. Someone has to write that post online. Korach was fighting for the everyman. Kol Eida Kulam Kedoshim. Everybody's holy. V'socham Hashem. He was representing and advocating and fighting for the everyman. Korach's fire pans were ultimately used to cover the Mizbeach because he had a holy kavana. He had a holy intent. But despite his holy intent, despite his noble cause, said the Altar of Kelm, you see how pernicious, how destructive machlokas is, that it brought his own demise, that of his children. What a message for our time, that people can no longer disagree agreeably. We've lost the art of how to argue. You could come to different conclusions. You could have different opinions and positions. We don't have to all look the same or be the same. But we have to love one another. We have to get along with one another. And that's the outrageous. The people who think, you know what I need for Parnassa, the biggest school for Parnassa. I'm going to read the Parshas Amon. I'm going to tie a red bendel. I'm going to re-put the Maktoris from a cloth. I'm going to stick a key into a challah. You want to do it, it connects you to Hashem. God bless. But the biggest school for Parnassa that exists is to not go near machlokas. Don't touch it with a 10-foot pole. Don't be counted among either side taking sides. Stay far away. No matter how noble the cause. Now, it's not machlokas when you fight anti-Semitism. It's not machlokas when you free an aguna. It's not machlokas when you stand up for Israel or stop Iran. I'm talking about machlokas from within our people. Svarim point out that in Birkas Kohanim, the quintessential bracha, what is the ultimate hope? For shalom. V'yaseim lecha shalom. V'yaseim lecha shalom. How do you achieve shalom? V'yaseim lecha. You have to take the first step. You have to be the one who refuses to get dragged in. You have to make the first move. Moshe Rabbeinu in our parsha goes to see them. He doesn't stand on ceremony. He doesn't say, do you know who I am? Do you know that Hashem himself has endorsed me? Do you know that the Ribbono Shel Olam said I'm categorically different than every human being? Moshe Rabbeinu leaves his tent to go to theirs. Ultimately, they're not able to resolve it. But Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'm not going to stand on ceremony. He tries to reconcile. It's an amazing story. I first heard this from my two guests tomorrow night in Behind the Bima, Tavi Safir and Yehuda Geber. The Baba Rebbe of Shlomo Halberstam was known for his tremendous, tremendous dedication to Shalom, to avoid machlokas. He was a man known for peace. Stay away from machlokas, got along with everybody. He was beloved by everyone. One time, in fact, someone published Pashkavilim. You know the big posters that they glue and they hang? They published Pashkavilim against the Baba Rebbe. And the Rebbe was so afraid that it would lead to machlokas that he gave the following message at Rosh Chodesh Tish. He said, I've been mochel the one who spread the Pashkavilim. But if anyone decides to start fighting with those who spread them, I'm not mochel you. Not in this world and not in the next. He didn't say, I'm not mochel the person who hung the posters. He said, if you choose to make a machlokas because of those posters, I'm not mochel you. So of course nobody touched it and there was no machlokas as a result. One of the oldest machlokas in the history of Hasidus, maybe the worst in the history of Hasidus, was the Baba Bereva's great-great-grandfather, the Divrei Chaim of Sanz, who battled against the Sadigur Hasidim. A son of the Rizhizer was a problematic personality, who joined the Maskilim, and the Divrei Chaim, therefore, because he was suspicious of having aligned forces with the Maskilim, the Divrei Chaim rejected all of Sadigur, and he went to a bitter, bitter battle that was very public, a horrific machlokas. Stayed in Galicia for years. There was a tension between Sanz and all of the branches of Sadigur, and it was a big, big, big machlokas between those two chasidus, between those two communities. Fast forward, one evening in Borough Park, Shlomo Babaver, the Babaver Rebbe, is walking home from his base medrash, and he passes a shtibel, a branch of Sadigur Chasidim. And it was a Yeretzite. It was the third of Cheshvan, the Yeretzite of the Rizhner. And the Babaver stops with his entourage, and he looks inside this little base medrash, and he sees what's happening. He says, "Nu, let's go inside. I want to be part of the Fabreng and the Tish." So the Gabbai gets all of his courage, turns to the Baba of a Rebbe, and he says, "Rebbe, but the Zayda, the Divrei Chaim of Sanz, he went to war. This was the battle of his life. How could you go against the Zayda? You're going to go inside? You're going to make peace? You're going to join forces? How could you go inside?" So the Baba Rebbe, the Yisholim, who spent his whole life trying to make peace, he said the following to his Gabbai. He said, "I don't have my Zayda, the Divrei Chaim's Torah. I don't have my Zayda, I'm not my personality. I don't have my Zayda, the Divrei Chaim's Chesed. I'm not Zocha to have my Zayda, the Divrei Chaim's Kedusha. I haven't reached the level of my Zayda, the Divrei Chaim's Chasidus. I'll never be the Divrei Chaim's, I don't have his leadership qualities. I don't have anything like my Zayda, the Divrei Chaim. The one thing I should keep, the one way I should be like him, is to hold on to this machlokas. Makes no sense. If that is the only thing I have from him, I can let go of that as well." And with that, he took his Gabbai by his hand, and they went in to the Sadigur Yeretzite Tish. So machlokas is a lav, it's an isser. It's time to let go. You see how destructive, you see how negative it is. I had to quote from Rav Bender, because my new son-in-law, in the middle of Sheva Brachas, a little Leorah here, Simen Tov Mazel Tov. I would sing for you, but nobody wants to hear that. So Rav Bender, in his beautiful Sefer on Chumash, on the Pillars of Rebbeim, he also talks about machlokas, and the nature and the danger of it. Om Ben Pelas, we know that Om Ben Pelas was meant to join Korach's rebellion, but his wife, Leora, listen carefully, it's your job. Not that Hillel would ever be a machlokas. His wife objected, even though Om Ben Pelas was persuaded. She uncovered her hair, stood at the doorway. The people therefore went another way. And based on that, we attribute to her the pasuk in Mishlei Chachmos Nashim Bansa Besa. She built her home, the wisdom of a woman, to be able to cut through that temptation to machlokas. Because if we're honest, most people get a little thrill. Like to stand on the sideline. They get a little joy. What is all sports if not watching the competitiveness? Who will emerge the winner? Who will triumph? Of course, the Yankees. Who will come in second place, at least? Who will come in second place? That's the nature of all sports, is the competitiveness, the war, the battle, the gridiron, the football field, the long bomb, it's all language of machlokas, football. It's the famous comedian, the difference between football and baseball. Baseball, the whole goal is to be safe at home. Football, throw a bomb, it's all about the gridiron, it's all about violence. So we all have a little piece of that. Noam Ben Peles also wanted to be part of the action. He was persuaded. It was his wife who stood in. It was his wife who had the clarity of mind. Chochmas Nashim. It was her wisdom, her insight, her penetrating insight that Bansa Besa. What does it mean to build a home? What does it mean to build a home? When you build a home, what do you have to build it out of? Walls. And what do the walls do? They know what to keep in and they know what to keep out. The walls are protective. The walls are insulation. Chochmas Nashim. It's the wisdom and the intuition and the instinct of a woman. Leora, listen carefully. That Bansa Besa, that's what we rely on. We rely on. Klal Yisrael, Judaism, the Torah is in our, the original feminists. We understand the beauty and the wisdom and the strength. We don't blur the differences or make everyone exactly the same. We play the strengths and we rely on each for what they contribute and their role. Shlomo HaMelech was not apologizing and he wasn't defensive. There was no movement in his time that he had to sound defensive or apologetic towards. So why did Shlomo HaMelech say Chochmas Nashim Bansa Besa? Because he meant it. Because it's true. Because it's axiomatically the way God designed and created the world. That we rely on that feminine quality of Chochmas Nashim, that instinct, that intuition, to Bansa Besa, to put up walls. What can come in and what has to stay out. Own Ben Peles was ready to knock down those walls and to join forces with Korach. But Mrs. Own Ben Peles said, no way, not on my watch. Bansa Besa. She didn't let it in. She didn't let it in. So Rav Bender writes, I remember a beautiful family, two siblings that survived the war. It was just them. Everyone else had been killed, Rahman al-Tzlan. Fine people, they raised a beautiful family. But they fought. Two siblings did not speak for decades. Fight ended when one of them died and could no longer speak. They never made peace. Everyone else had been killed, and these two survivors, agents of rebuilding, had thrown away so much happiness, so much potential nachas to the neshamas of their parents, so much shared joy over whatever insignificant issue had come between them. I've seen families not talk for generations. Recently was dealing with one, and when you ask what happened, nobody even remembers the origin of the fight. Nobody even remembers what began it all. They just know our Masorah is, we don't talk to that branch of the family. The grandparents didn't talk, the parents didn't talk, we don't talk. Why? What happened? We don't remember, we just know we don't talk. Baba Rebbe says, you don't have any of the other greatness of the grandparents? You can let go of that too. You can let go of that too. The Panovich Rebbe recounted a period of antagonism in Radin, and the fire of Machlokas tore through the town. The townspeople all got involved in the disagreement between the local Shochtim. The Chavetz Chaim called a meeting of the whole town of Radin. Says Rav Bender, this is what the Chavetz Chaim said. A Yid who fights is compared to a wealthy man with a pocket of gold coins. But there's a hole in his pocket. With every step he takes, the money pours out of his pocket. Eventually, this one small hole will cost him his entire fortune. Radin or Yidin, said the Chavetz Chaim, Jews of Radin, what purpose is all your Torah and mitzvos, all the gold, if you have a hole that's going to allow everything to fall out? I beg you, have mercy. When the day of judgment comes and you stand before the Kisei HaKavod, do not mention my name. I've warned you, proceed at your own caution. Machlokas will cost you everything. That was the chachma of the wife of Own Ben Peles. The wisdom that made her build to put up walls, to keep out what doesn't belong in, to build. You could build and build and build, and you can be tasked after everybody passes away and you survive with rebuilding. You could have gold of Torah and mitzvos. You could have health and parnasa. You could have ala milas and ala brachas in the world. But if you have machlokas, you have a hole in your pocket, and the gold coins are falling out. Until you'll be left bankrupt and indigent and alone with absolutely nothing left, like me and the amount of time there is left in this shir. Vayishma, Pasuk Tazayim, Pasuk Dalet. See if we're even going to turn the page. Vayishma Moshe, Vayipol Al Panav. Moshe heard and he fell on his face. What does this mean? Moshe heard and he fell on his face. I'm skipping a beautiful Rav Nachman. Nachman. Okay, I'll tell it to you. Fine. You convinced me very quickly. But outside. Outside. Korach says, everybody's holy. Why are Moshe and Aaron, why are they elevated above everybody else? Rav Nachman writes in Likutei Muharan, Ikar HaGedolah Shemekabla Me'atzadik HaShiflus. When you're in the presence of greatness, it should make you feel not I'm as great and I'm greater. It should make you feel I'm humble. When you in fact have access and you're close to the righteous, to great, you're margish shiftless. You realize I'm a nothing and a nobody. I need to make my life and make myself into something. Korach accused Moshe of arrogance. You know why? You know why? Because the Gemara in Kedushin says, Kol aposel b'mumo posel. Whatever you see in someone else is really revealing and reflecting what's inside yourself. When you're critical of someone else, when you accuse someone else of something, you are in fact exposing or revealing what's inside you. So when Korach comes at Moshe and Aaron and accuses them of arrogance, of ego, it's really because he's arrogant and because he has ego. Whatever we accuse the other of, we're revealing what's in our side. So when you want to level an accusation, when you want to offer a criticism of another, stop and immediately look in the mirror and say, am I seeing that flaw in the other because really that's the flaw in me? Am I identifying the struggle, the problem in the other because that's really the garbage inside me that I'm contending with, that I need to be honest about, that I need to overcome within myself? When you point a finger at another, there are three fingers pointing back at you. Kol aposel b'mumo posel. Whenever you accuse the other, you're really revealing what's wrong and what's off with inside yourself. Another Megid Yosef, quickly. Vayishma Moshe. Gemara in Sanhedrin says, what did Moshe hear? Vayishma Moshe. So they gathered, vayikahalu. They gathered on Moshe. They distributed a letter all over the community. They wrote a post on social media. They called for a town meeting. A town hall meeting. And Moshe heard them. What did he hear? Vayishma Moshe. Says the Gemara, Shama shechashduhu me'ishas ish. The murmurings, the rumblings, the whispers. You know what they were saying? Moshe Rabbein is sleeping around with the married women. Could you imagine? Moshe Rabbeinu? That's what they were accusing him of? Torah Tamima on the Gemara says, Kol mezgal asof nechshal be'ishas ish. Where did that accusation come from? Where did that suspicion come from? How could they say that about a Moshe Rabbeinu? Lahavdil, I'm not even going to give an example because I'm too ashamed too. Whoever the gadol you're picturing in our time, the gadol of today, the gadol of yesterday, could you imagine that would break out and they would say that gadol could say a lot of things about them, but you're going to send and spread an accusation, they're nichshol be'ishas ish, they're sleeping with married women? The Gemara in Sota says, do you know where it comes from that a person loses their moral boundaries and crosses that boundary of faithfulness? Kol hamizga'e. When you're so arrogant, when you're arrogant and you think you're above the law, when you're arrogant and you think that you're above reproach, that's when you fall morally and you'll cross that line. Korach v'adaso elinu ha-moshe ki misnasehu aleihem. So this is exactly along the lines, it's a continuation of the insight of Rav Nachman. What was at the core of Korach? It expressed itself as rebelliousness. It was a form of envy and jealousy. But what was the disease? What was the malaise? What was the malady? What caused it? Arrogance, ego. So therefore, because he was arrogant and egotistical, he projected it on Moshe and arrived at the conclusion, I can't even say it, that Moshe Rabbeinu was guilty of that. So the Megid Yosef says, Kol shomer Torah mitzvos choshev la'atzmo, ein ze bechlal efsharushi kasher ba'avo nora shalishas ish. Someone says, I'm Orthodox. I'm observant. I'm a shomer Shabbos. So we are immune to infidelity. Affairs and infidelity, not by us. Not for the shomer Shabbos. Not for the Orthodox and observant. Mikol mokom yard the Torah l'sof tivo shel adam asher yetzer bor ba'atzmo sof. But you see, nobody's immune and nobody is above. Everyone's vulnerable and susceptible. Why? Because when you add arrogance to the mixture, arrogance to the picture, when you think you're above the law and above reproach, that's when you are the most vulnerable and susceptible. That's why HaTorah asas yagim la'arayos. That's why the Torah has so many fences around promiscuity, around this issue. You see a world, we're living our generation, our time, is an incredibly arrogant world. we understand where it comes from. The technological advance and progress and breakthrough is at hyperspeed, sonic speed. We learn and discover and introduce new things to the world at a faster pace than anyone before. It's the information age. We have access to gazillions of terabytes of information at our fingertips. It makes sense that we swell with arrogance, that we think that we're so accomplished. But there's an enormous danger. When a generation thinks it's arrogant, you know what happens? They forget God. There was just a poll last week. Who does all the polls? Pew. The belief in God in America is at an all-time low. Belief in God among Americans is at an all-time low. I don't think it's a coincidence that the belief in God is at such a low, and the rise of immorality, promiscuity, licentiousness, and all the challenges and dissolving of boundaries. There used to be such a thing called boundaries. Zachor Nekeva Bar'am. Shem created a world of men and women. We knew the difference. Created a world of relationships, of monogamy, of loyalty, of marriage, of contract, of obligation, of faithfulness. A world of modesty. Person dressed, person reserved. Modesty physically, that you shared certain things only for a certain setting and certain people instead of with the world. Modesty emotionally, there were feelings or thoughts you had that you kept inside yourself or shared with your closest confidants. You didn't post for the whole world to read and see. We had boundaries. We had boundaries. And they're gone. And they're disappearing. Every boundary. Boundaries to our thoughts and feelings. Boundaries to our body. Boundaries to our definitions. And I don't think it's a coincidence that belief in God is plummeting and these challenges are rising. Vayishma Moshe. Moshe understood. He heard the murmurings. They accused him. Why? Because they were guilty of it themselves. Kol aposel b'mum aposel. You accuse the other what you're guilty of, what you're capable of. And when you're arrogant and you think you're above the law and you're above God, then your boundaries dissolve and disappear. And you're capable of unfaithfulness. That was something they struggled with, and therefore they accused Moshe of. Vayishma Moshe. He heard it, and he understood it, and he accused him of it. We didn't even get past the first page today. This is an all-time low for our shir. I'm humiliated, and I'm embarrassed. Goodness gracious. Korach's eye tricked him. Why was it his eye that tricked him? He saw who would descend from him. Also part of his arrogance. Okay, we'll end with this because it's one last thought along the same lines. Perek Tzayin Pasuk Zayin. Also, it enables us to turn to the second page. Moshe hears, and he says, "Tnu b'hein eish v'simu alem k'toros l'vnei Hashem machar v'ya'ish ha'shivich Hashem u'akadosh rav lachem b'nei Levi." Put a fire and place incense on them before Hashem. Incense is the answer, by the way. K'toros is what's mechaper mesakein every plague. It was Mechaper Mesakein Korach in the time of David HaMelech. There was a pandemic, and it was Ketor. We have a tradition about Ketoros, its role. We've spoken about it in the past. We've spoken about Machar, tomorrow, the idea and the ideal of tomorrow. Boker, why Boker? You got to listen to the previous Shirim. You get, again, because of the people I quote, nothing to do with me. Vaya Isha Sher Yivchar Hashem, the one who Hashem chooses, Hu HaKadosh, he's the Holy One. Rav Lachem B'nei Levi, it's too much for you. Children, Moshe flips it, right? The same thing that was said to him, he says to them, and God later says it to him. Rav Lachem, you could spend hours just on those words. Rav Lachem, Rav Lachem. So the Rashi quotes, Korach Shepikeach Haya. Korach was brilliant, he was a Pikeach. Ma Ra L'shtus Zeh. How did he come to such misguided foolishness? How did it happen? Korach came to such misguided foolishness. Shtus. We know that anytime a person sins, nichnas baruach shtus. We're overcome by insanity. Because if we stop and think, is this what Hashem wants from me right now? Is this going to be good for me or will it sabotage me? If we actually maintain our clarity, our consciousness, our mindfulness, our judgment, then we can never do that thing. So when we do that thing, it's only because nichnas bano ruach shtus. So what was the ruach shtus that entered Korach? He was a pikeach, he was a smart person. What are you doing? He knew it was going to end. So Rashi quotes Chazal, eino hitaso. His eye tricked him, his eye fooled him. What does that mean, his eye fooled him? Again, we've discussed in the past, not for now. We have two eyes, Godless Adam, shiftless Adam. With one eye we see the greatness, another eye we see. We need the balance in order to have good vision, peripheral vision. You need to have a balance between the eye that sees godless Adam, the eye of shiftless Adam. When you're blind in one eye, as Bilam was, as Korach was, all you see is godless Adam. You have no sense of shiftless Adam. Then your eye has fooled you. Then you don't see clearly. So what did he see? Shalshelas gedula yotza mimenu. Korach's offspring, his progeny, Shmuel, who was equal to Moshe and Aaron, Chavtal Mishmaros, Shekulam Misnabim, the 24 Mishmaros of the Beis HaMikdash that he saw in Ruach HaKodesh, he said, all this is going to descend from me, this greatness, Shmuel Bedoro, Moshe, like Moshe and Aaron, all is going to descend from me, this greatness. So he said, I must be great. If it's all descending from me, and I'm the source, I'm the origin, it originates with me, I must be great. And I deserve great distinction and great power. So the stipler is Atzal. B'zeh gufa ro'al atzmo shevach kol gadol she'yatzo mimenu shmuel v'chavta al mishmaros yachol al yishtamesh kedei lizromeim l'harchik atzmo me'achlokas. He should have seen that and come to the opposite conclusion. If this is who will descend from me, I need to ingrain, I need to bequeath to them pure genetics, spiritual genetics. I have to stay as far away as possible from achlokas. I have to be the best version of myself so I could pass that on to them. Instead, he came to the opposite conclusion. If I stand to produce such greatness, machlokas, I must be great, I deserve more. He should have come to the opposite conclusion. So the stipler concludes, and with this so do we. Apirov kolakois v'toin tainas v'yotzi machlokas shemagil lo kavod v'shafi daito kipchu b'misaros zau atzmo ateretz l'kach shemagil lo oso kavod shudorish. When a person wants more honor, why didn't I get the aliyah? Why didn't they honor me at the dinner? Why am I not the chairman or the president? Why am I not of the better seat? When a person ever advances that they deserve more honor, or why does someone else get it? That's the answer themselves. Their very advancement of that argument is the teretz. They're giving the answer to their own question. The very fact that they articulate that, they pursue that they feel that, is the exact answer or explanation of why they don't have it and why they don't get it. We're supposed to run away from kavod and not chase it. When you run away from kavod, kavod runs after you. When you run towards kavod, the kavod runs away from you. So much more to say, but for now, have a great day. Stay happy, stay healthy, stay holy tomorrow morning. Pesilas Hasharim, living with Emunah tomorrow night. Davi Safir and Yehuda Geber, a great behind the bima. Have a great day.